So we were a little late to the game, but my husband and I finally got to see the Broadway show Hadestown a few weeks ago. I don't know, has anybody seen it? Some hands are going up. Okay, cool. So if you haven't seen it, spoiler alert, it's a modern retelling of the tragedy of Orpheus and Eurydice. So no spoiler alert, really, because this is an ancient tale that people kind of hear as they go through school. So the cliff notes are that Orpheus falls in love and marries Eurydice. Eurydice then dies, and then grief-stricken Orpheus goes to the underworld to try to bring her back, and Hades, the god of the underworld, allows him to bring Eurydice back with him on one condition, which is that he cannot, as she follows him out of the underworld, he is not allowed to turn around and look behind him to check and see if she is still there. And if he does, she will be destined to live in the underworld forever. And so as the trip from the underworld back to the land of the living progresses, Orpheus gets more and more mistrusting and anxious that she is, whether she's there or not behind him, more skeptical, more uncertain. And at the very last minute, he can't take it anymore, and he turns around to see her standing right there. She's been there all along, and then dooms her to an eternity in the underworld. So, spoiler alert. but the thing about, I mean, a lot of people know the story before they go to see the show. So the thing is, like, a lot of people, audience members, you go into this show knowing how it's going to end. And yet, what Jeremy and I were remarking about afterwards was that what was so good about it and what really stood out to us was that even though you know how it's going to end, it was done so well that you are still just absolutely crushed the moment Orpheus turns around and sees Eurydice right there where she's been all along, because as the audience, you know she's there, right? And you just, as the audience member, you're kind of going, my God, if only, come on, Orpheus, if only you could trust, if only you could just trust that she was still there. If only you knew what we knew. 57 years ago today, an Episcopal Seminary student named Jonathan Myrick Daniels was arrested, along with several others, after taking part in a civil rights protest in Alabama. After they were jailed for 6 days, Jonathan and three others that he was with, a Catholic priest and two black teenage girls, were unexpectedly released from jail. And aware that they were in danger, the four of them walked nearby to a small store. And as 16-year-old Ruby Sales, who was one of the four of them, reached the top step of that store, a man with a gun appeared, cursing her. And Jonathan, seeing the danger, pulled her aside and took the bullet that was intended for her, and he was killed instantly. Today is his feast day in the Episcopal Church. What made this privileged white man from New England leave the comfort of his life and join the civil rights movement was the call of Martin Luther King Jr. to come to Selma and to secure for all citizens the right to vote. And he found the conviction and the inspiration to do so in the Song of Mary, the Magnificat. Quoting Daniels, he says, "He hath put down the mighty from their seat, and hath exalted the humble and meek. He hath filled the hungry with good things. I knew that I must go to Selma. The virgin's song was to grow more and more dear to me in the weeks ahead." And I don't think it is without meaning that tomorrow is the feast day of the Virgin Mary. Jonathan Daniels knew, as Martin Luther King had told those who joined the fight for civil rights, that he would not necessarily see the fruits of his labor. He knew that walking the treacherous road to justice did not guarantee that he would see the promised land. What he did know was that he had to trust that God was right there behind him. Keep going. Don't look back. Don't let your doubts make you lose sight of where you're headed. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as if it were dry land. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after they had been encircled for 7 days. By faith, Rahab did not perish By faith, God's people conquered kingdoms, administered justice, obtained promises. By faith, Jonathan Daniel stepped in between a young black girl and an angry white man and his gun. And as the letter to the Hebrews says, yet all these, though they were commended for their faith, did not receive what was promised. Martin Luther King, Jonathan Daniels, countless others lost their lives before seeing the better world that they were fighting for. I think that is a concept that is harder and harder for us to grasp. In a world of guaranteed results and instant gratification, to commit yourself to an action or a cause or a path and not have the payoff makes it foolish to even justify the effort, to think that it's worth it at all. And to live for God's promise and not receive what is promised, well, that can make God seem far off and not close by. Like maybe God doesn't actually keep God's promises. And when that happens, when we go from doubt to mistrust, then we get blinded from a bigger picture. Do you think that I've come to bring peace to the earth? No, I tell you, but rather division. Jesus tells of the division that will occur when we follow him. Division even within households, mother against daughter, father against son. But it's no accident that Jesus puts the family at the center of the division that he brings. The household was the fundamental building block of society in his day. And in proclaiming that he brings division, and that division will threaten the household, and it will fracture families, Jesus shows us that his mission is not to maintain the status quo or validate human institutions, but to trample them with God's radical will. God's dream for this world threatens the stability of all of the structures that we hold near and dear. And the less we trust in God and each other, the more division we will see. And where this leaves me to wonder is whether this division is prescriptive or descriptive. Has Jesus truly come to bring division? Is that truly God's mission and dream for us? Or is division simply the inevitable result of Jesus's mission? Is division what Jesus wants? Or is it what he knows will happen when people choose to follow him? The text itself suggests that the division Jesus brings is the result of following him, that his radical challenge of the status quo and existing societal structures will naturally sow division among his followers. You don't have to look too hard around us to see evidence of that all around. Division is not the wind in Jesus' sails, but it follows in his wake. And I must ask, does that make it any better? Whether division is God's intent for us or not, the fact remains it is a natural byproduct of our faith. How is that good news? And perhaps an even more difficult follow-up question, does that mean that when division begins, the gospel is actually at work among us? Those are hard questions, but I think the answer might lie somewhere in an inventory of our own inner workings. How large our capacity to trust really is. How wide angle of a lens we look through. Are we Orpheus, less and less trusting of what we can't see? Or are we Jonathan Daniels, trusting in a goal that might stretch beyond our life's horizon? How can I be sure that the promised land will arrive one day? How can I trust that you're right behind me, God, when there is no proof until we get there? How can I follow you when I can't be sure I will ever know if it was all worth it? By faith, others before us have walked this road of holding the long view, of working for a reward their descendants will enjoy, a great cloud of witnesses who inspire us to keep going. It is worth noting that these ancestors in the faith are not people who necessarily succeeded at what they set out to do or receive the promise God made. And that we do not see those efforts as futile. We don't look down on them as examples of what not to do. We see them as models of inspiration and sources of energy for us. So, what if that was you one day? What if that was all of us? What if we are meant to live lives that will bear fruit that we will never taste? What if God's purpose for us is to join the great cloud of witnesses who point the way to a horizon that we will not live to reach? These are questions that we don't think to ask in our instant gratification, guaranteed results world, but they are the questions that Jesus asks of us. We may never see the glory of the world that God dreams of, and yet we are invited to live for it. There will be division. There will be times when God seems far off instead of close by and right at our backs. But with our capacity to trust, our capacity for faith, that will not be the end of the story. And so, friends, I ask you this morning, isn't that worth a try? Amen.